Welcome back to the Hero Mindset Podcast. And today, on episode 7, we're joined by Tim Roper. Tim was introduced to me by Danny Lee, the Danny Lee Podcast, and I'm glad to have Tim here. His latest venture is working with the United Way, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Yep. And he's going to tell us he's into a lot of other interesting things, and he's going to bring us up to speed on where he's at. So, Tim, thanks for joining us on the Hero Mindset Podcast. Bring us up to speed on where you're at these days and what you're working on.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me here. I love meeting new people and building connections out there, and Danny Lee's definitely one of them that I've gotten to know over the years. I've been on his podcast a couple times and love the direction he's taken with that, as well as he supports those who serve our great country here. Yeah, I work for what's known as the United Way of Northern Utah. So we cover the northern part of Utah with multiple programs that we help our community out, such as helping, we kind of say that we help from the cradle to career there at United Way. So we have a lot of different programs. We're also the great thing about the United Way is we're an umbrella organization that can help other nonprofits as well. So one of the cool things we do at our specific United Way is we have a connection center specific for nonprofits to come and learn how to be a nonprofit. We have space that they can utilize, conference rooms that they can use, because these are boots on the ground organizations. Other than that, I also am the chair of the board of an organization called Open Doors that we help combat generational poverty. So anything that we can do, we're trying to really stop homelessness before it becomes homeless. We want to actually attack it at what the cause is, instead of just treating the symptoms out there. So we're very pro keeping people into their homes, and we offer a lot of different programs here in Utah that can help families, whether it's education. We run a program called Circles. That's a 12-week program for families to come and learn to be self-sufficient. We say we offer a hand up, not a hand out. So I help with that organization as well. I just wrapped up 9 years serving on my local city council in Clearfield, Utah. So that was a
A long
great,
time.
it is a long, long time. I was actually running for a third term to do 4 more years, but I lost by a very thin margin. But I'm very proud of my work there. I worked very closely with our firefighters here and was able to be a part of building a beautiful new state-of-the-art fire station here for it was very good price to do it. So I was very proud of that work, but very proud to work with those men and women who put their life on the line all the time for us in our worst moments. So that's kind of me. Other than my family, I have 6 kids that keep my wife and I pretty busy, pretty engaged with them. But my whole focus now is just on community and focused on how can we bring each other together. Especially in a divisive world where we all kind of I've kind of had the mindset lately of, it's one thing to be right, but you don't have to be a jerk about it, kind of thing. So how do we come together? How do we work in our communities and actually do what's right for our community?
Well, something that when I was reading a little bit about you earlier when I was doing some preparation for us for you being on the podcast today, that you mentioned the combating generational poverty, and that really stuck with me because we talked. On the podcast, we're, the hero mindset is all about hope, efficacy, resilience, and optimism, and dismissing that, like the heroism fallacy, right? That these great things that we do are have to be come from acts of, I guess, desperation, right? If we think of some great heroes in history, when we think of Medal of Honor winners, they, what we recognize them for is that one moment, right? And it's this superhuman strength, this bravery that just all manifests in a moment and allows them to, in the most desperate moments, to do some things. And I kind of got to thinking, I was like, man, that's kind of really that's just a snapshot, and it creates a heroism fallacy. And so what I like to talk about, and this is where your background kind of resonated with me, is when you start talking about generational poverty, just like the bad things kind of accumulate in our lives. In my mind, in the hero mindset, we leverage our strengths and eat little actions each and every day, building relationships, having places like you're talking about for people to turn when they want to start a new business, or they want to, they want to try and stay in their home, but they're having financial difficulties. All those things, we all benefit from those things, and they all help create hope. They all help create efficacy, and they help create resilience and optimism. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in that space.
And I agree with you. It's something that resonated with me as well as why I got involved there. My time at Open Doors got started because the mayor of Clearfield, when you're on the city council, they appoint you to different boards, right? So he came to me and said, "Hey, you've been asked to be on this board at Open Doors. The way we've set up our board is we have so many elected officials, so many people from the business community. And then we have actual people that are going through our programs beyond our board." So he asked me to be on that. And then when I lost this last election, which was actually, I think, kind of a good thing for me, the executive director and the rest of the board came and said, "Hey, we want to keep you on our board."
Yeah,
And this
that's
is the
great.
plan we have. We had some openings and stuff, so I kind of just shifted into a different position there. But it's kind of become just, my passion of wanting to help. I've kind of just we talk a lot about helping people, and we want to stop homelessness. And some of us have this misconceived notion of what homelessness is and what it looks like. It doesn't look like what a lot of us think it is. It's your single mom who husband has been abusive and kicked her out of the house, or she didn't feel safe there. Now she's living out of her vehicle with her small children. And once that picture got painted for me, I knew that this is where I wanted to be. And I spent the last 5 years working for my chamber of commerce, and I was like, I just really want to get more involved on the nonprofit side of things, because this really we talk about where the rubber hits the road, and this is really where it's hitting the road. And I've always had this philosophy, even on the city council, of being, on the ground level. I want to be there. I want to know. Working with our firefighters, I go and work the back of an ambulance because I felt like I couldn't make a financial decision, and I feel this way at Open Doors, if I don't know exactly what my people are going through.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time with them on that. But we need more people who are just willing to put our differences aside and just put an arm around somebody that you probably wouldn't normally put your arm around. Sometimes there are people that you just kind of want to walk past on the road, but their journey there sometimes wasn't what you think it is. It's sometimes, and most times, it's something out of their control. And
Yeah.
so we really try hard to do that through programs like we can come in and be a moderator between them and their landlord. Maybe we can help pay a couple months' rent just to keep them in their house. Let's get them into our programs where we can help them. And one thing I really love about the Circles program is we take them and assign them a mentor. We call them an ally. So when they get through this program, we're just not saying, "Okay, you're good to go." We actually say, "This is your person." And we've seen single moms who've never taken their kids on vacation be able to learn how to budget and take their kids to Disneyland, right?
Yeah.
We have an amazing woman who runs our Circles program, and this is a national program run by different people. But just in her short time there, she's She's brought 10 families above the poverty line. And when these people come above the poverty line, they are, the lights go on and they think that they've hit, gold, out there. And we've still got a long ways to go with them. But just to see their, you talk about the hero mindset. These people are heroes to me, taking the courage on to, really face their challenges. And these aren't easy challenges to face. They have to overcome a lot of things, but when they finally do it's great to see them know that they can accomplish things, that they can go and apply for that job that they didn't think they were qualified for and become a manager somewhere. We had a woman working at a retail store, and someone just said, apply for this job, apply for the manager's position, and she got it, but kind of it was able to give her the confidence to go do that. And that's what I like most about this.
Well, and that's, when, I talk a lot about, especially, I mean, no matter who I'm working with, but even with, executives and people that we think wouldn't struggle with these things. The CEO of, I'm not saying that this person was a client, but, the CEO of Walmart or, the CEO of Apple, we look at athletes, LeBron James, we think people don't struggle, with esteem because they've reached a certain point. But there's kind of three components to making sure that we can be able to thrive, right? Not just survive, but to thrive. And, self-worth, self-confidence, and or self-esteem and self-efficacy, right? And so when we look at that, what you're talking about there is building that esteem, right? Taking the action to help build that esteem, which then, build your efficacy, and it helps solidify your self-worth. We have to work on these things. We like to say, and I used to kind of be in this camp. Now I'm kind of in the middle, in the sense, that, self-worth, and I think it is self-worth. You have to be, you just have to have this unconditional acceptance of yourself, right? But I think part of our ability to do that is by failing and succeeding, trying new stuff, being curious, getting out there. And what you're talking about seems it seems to me that you're helping these people rediscover their curiosity. You're helping them build their esteem. What how do you What's your success been like? Are you targeting, are you very, are you targeting certain, certain groups? And I ask that because, as you know, our environments influence our thoughts, our beliefs, our behaviors. They're very influential, and if we, it reminds me, you've probably seen it, that movie Trading Places, where they, Dan Aykroyd gets pushed, thrown in jail, and now the bets, well, hey, we can give, essentially the time old argument of nature versus nurture, right? So are you guys screening people to see if they kind of where they're at and what and where they need to start at? Are you starting them at different, points in your program when you bring them in?
Great question. And so we have about, and we're just a small organization, right? And we have about 20, 25 people probably there that we keep on staff, handling different programs for us and a lot of volunteers. But even just if you our Circles program, we have about a 95 to 97% success rate, bringing them to some sort of understanding of what it means to be self-sufficient. And I think sometimes we think self-sufficiency is really taking care of ourselves and just doing everything on our own. And I think we have a misconceived notion there that it's not that. It's, hey, these people are here actually to help. Self-sufficiency is being willing to go ask people for help and knowing the programs out there. And it's even my work at the United Way, it's amazing that most nonprofits struggle just getting their story out there and letting people knowing what they're
Marketing.
doing. It's marketing, right? They don't have a lot of budget for it where major corporations do, and that's where we need a lot of help with people coming and getting involved. But yeah, that self-sufficiency there, helping them come to some sort of notion that there are people out there definitely willing to help you out. And that's the message I want to share there. There's still some amazing good in this world. Sometimes it's just great to step back from the media and everything like that and focus on just those good things that are going on and helping people celebrate the small things in their lives. It may be just that they were able to pay a bill for the first time with their own money, their own income, that they were able to go buy some groceries, and cheering them on for that just buoys them up. And that's why I say, we've got to get past these biases, and we all have them. But sometimes we think the guy on the corner begging, we don't know his story. We don't know what put them there. And yeah, there's the bad things out there. We know that there's lots of scams out there. We've got to be careful of those things. But if we just get to know the people in our neighborhood, then we know the people that we can really, really help. I think, nobody should be alone. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't spend time on our own, but it means that we should all at least have a friend that we can go to. And even in my life, I recently went through change and started, really having some panic attacks in my life. I was trying to, redo my life, and where did I fit in? I knew I wanted to get more involved in this. My life changed really, really quick, where I moved on from the chamber. I lost my election, and so there were some other changes, and I ended up at the doctor and, asking for help. I knew those people who I could go out to. I knew that there was a few friends that I could go to and say, "Hey, this is going on in my life." And just them putting their arms around me and saying, "Hey, you don't have to do this alone. We're here for you. When you start to feel this way, call me, and I'm there for you." And I try to do that for the people in my life. And I think that's where connection and relationships matter. And I ponder this a lot, but it's interesting because human nature is we need other human connection. But it's the one thing we probably fight the most in our lives is we don't want people too close to us because they don't want us to know the real us. But when we're willing to push those vulnerabilities out there and be public with our vulnerabilities, it just breaks down so many walls for us. And so teaching these individuals, and I have to give the credit to our amazing staff at Open Doors and even the amazing team I work with at the United Way. They do amazing things out of the community and things that they don't want credit for out there. And those are the true heroes out there, I think.
You talked about, so let's talk about you talked about your transition from political life, being an elected representative for your town there, and that's a good point, because people would look at you and say, well, Tim's fine. Tim doesn't need he's good. He's a little strung, high strung, because he didn't, he lost the election and he wanted to do a few more years, but he's okay. And that's good social proof of what I was just talking about. So you were a relatively high performer. I mean, you were able to run for, city council, maintain your position for a significant amount of times. You were able to engage. And I would say this, I would say somebody that's willing to, it's a special breed of person that's willing to run for city council and to,
A little crazy, but yes.
and to, it's it, because I mean, there's people that are successful in business that even wouldn't want to do it. It takes somebody, you're not, it's a lot of long, it can be a lot of long nights. It can be a lot of, terrible phone calls. People only, we all know that more people mostly only want to talk to people when it's time to complain. They're not calling to say, hey, good job filling that pothole, so that my Rolls Royce doesn't, I don't have to buy new tires for my Rolls Royce again or whatever. It's, hey, this pothole still, you filled the pothole, but it's not totally smooth. It's people find whatever they want to complain about, is my point. But
Absolutely.
And I said that to say that people wouldn't have, probably have looked at you and thought there wasn't anything going on. But like I said earlier, you're excellent social proof for that. No matter where we're at in life, we struggle with something. I've worked with people that have fairly successful, consulting practices, very successful in whatever, in the military, and they still have things, mindsets in certain instances that challenge their self-image, so their ego, that challenge their confidence or their esteem and their and even their efficacy to a certain extent, right? And so I congratulate you for having that courage to reach out, because
Thank you.
even at it's tough, and as we make those transitions, it gets even tougher, because
It does.
our what's on the outside when we talk about I think there's self-identity and how we want others to see us, and to me, that's an easy way to remember ego, right? It's what we're projecting. It's
Yeah.
what it's the it's you know it's like it's how we get dressed up, right? I'll tell you a good example analogy kind of, is my father. When he was at a certain point in his business, especially early on, he wouldn't wear a suit and tie every day, but he wasn't gonna he didn't wear if he went out of the house, he didn't have jeans on, because he said, "I didn't know who I was going to run into," right? So we're that's a good
Yeah.
analogy or metaphor for how we're projecting this image. And when we leave places like the city council or the military or being the manager wherever, at Walmart or the Apple store or wherever, a lot of those things are tied up in our ego, and it
Absolutely, yeah.
challenges. And then we're now we become fearful, anxious about, well, how is this going to affect this image that I'm trying to project, right? That I'm trying to, and that's there's nothing good, bad, or indifferent about that. It's just it's kind of how we operate. So people struggle at all levels, and it looks different. And like you said, we kind of tend to think of people that are homeless as not doing things, but like you said, a lot of times it's not about not having, it's about not having enough. And that person has prioritized, and they've went into that fight or flight survival mode, right? So it's, hey, I having a place to stay, or getting my own place is a far reach, but I can sleep in the car, I can buy gas, I can pay for the Planet Fitness membership that gets at least gets me access to a shower, and the kids are old enough that I can take in there so I can get them what they need, and I can buy food. And I, we don't all, depending on our experiences, we may not realize that. And the
Yeah.
other thing that resonates with me and what you're saying is, I think we all, and I was talking to somebody very successful in our community, and he said, my money wasn't my daddy's money. My dad, he made it very clear that his money was not our money. At the same time, when you listen to his story, he did work very hard, and his dad made him do all the, they were developers, and his dad would put him on a curb crew and see how he did there, and make him, earn, air quotes, I guess, his way. And but even in that, my point is our environment is so critically important to how we're developing and how we're able to develop this, what I call the hero mindset.
Yeah.
And I think that you guys, your work is very important to that, because you're helping people change the parts of their environment that may not be working for them, learning to, and helping them learn to leverage their strengths. And I think that's important. And the other thing is important is, you know, we've all had somebody who's mentored us. We've all had somebody, you know, it's I'm not here just because I didn't do 25 years in the Army and rise to, you know, to the, you know, to the highest level that I could. I mean, there was nowhere else for me to go when I retired. My rank was E9, Sergeant Major. I couldn't do anything else. You know, that was it. There was no, I didn't get to that point because people hadn't, you know, shown me, you know, picked me up and dusted me off when I was down, or took the time. And so how do you find that the community's, you know, reacting to your efforts or supporting your all's efforts?
Yeah, and it's all different, right? I think it's the different levels that we're on. You know, I have people in my community here, and it's a pretty, you know, it has parts that's very affluential, right? And you know, there's those people who say, "Oh, we don't have a homeless problem here," and I'm like, "Yeah, we do. Let me go show you where this is at." You know, just in my little county alone, here in Davis County, Utah. We're the smallest county geographically in the state of Utah, but we have close to 1,400 homeless teens just in our county. So I think it's just the level that we're on that people may not realize what's going on in their community. And that's where I actually encourage people. Go, you don't have to run for elected office. In fact, I feel like I'm doing more now than I ever did in an elected position, you know, really helping people. But go find out what's going on in your community. You'll be amazed. You may think you know what's going on in your city, but there are a lot of things that go on. And I challenge people, just go start connecting the dots out there. Just go start finding organizations that need to get connected and that need to know about each other so that they can help each other. And you'll learn so much. I went to a food bank on the, I live on the north end of my county. I went to a food bank on the south end of my county. And I sat down with the executive director, and she showed me how many people were coming from my city to her city just to use her assistance. And I was blown away. And that's a good distance apart from each other. So we need to go out and get involved and learn things. Find a good nonprofit that you know is somewhat aligned with what you believe in and you know your passions in life. There's a lot of different ones out there. I love these ones that I can just go and you know actually help people. But there's so many good things that are going on in our communities. But that comes down, go help one of these nonprofits tell their story. Go serve in their organization and go share it on social media because you're going to go help them get the word out. Find out their needs. We love it when we can take someone on a tour of what we're doing and them ask, "Hey, what do you need?" I want to be connected to those people and I'd love to spread this. My goal now is just to let's connect all these nonprofits out there and that they can help each other out. And those are the things that we need to be doing if we want to have thriving communities.
You know, it's interesting that you know, one thing that amazes me about, you know, you is that you is your time on the city council, you know, and I like getting involved in novel problems and creating solutions. But one of the things that like keeps me you know, from running for city council here, and we have a problem here in my town where it's wash, rinse, and repeat. A council member, you know, they'll run, then they'll resign, they'll run for mayor, they'll get elected, then they'll resign, you know, they'll stop that, then they'll, you know, and it's wash, rinse, and repeat, which is somewhat foreign to me in my, you know, in terms of my military career, because one of the good things was like if I Tim was my commander and I didn't like him, you know, well, in a couple of years, one of us is going
He's
to be
gone in a
gone, you
couple of
know.
years.
And so you never, it was harder to stagnate, right? Especially it was harder in general to stagnate. The so How did you deal with, all the regulate? Because that's what I don't like. I don't mind solving problems, but I'm the kind of person like when a rule's not good no more, like rules are good until they're not, and then we need to change them. And how did you deal with that? How did you handle the rules? How did you confront, I guess, some of the sacred cows that, people like, we got to have a thriving downtown. That's one. Well, if everybody's moved away from downtown, maybe downtown needs to shift. Maybe I'm just saying, how did you kind of combat the sign of the conventional thinking in the bureaucracy?
No, we have faced, I've definitely faced those challenges out there. One thing that our city council, and they're still this way, and I love it, is, but when I first came on to our city council, we really honed in on our culture of what was going on and how were we going to work with city staff. We sat down as a council and we read a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And it was amazing how we all came together on this because we decided as a council, we can debate, we can disagree all you want in this room, but when we walk out of this room, we want the mentality that we can go get ice cream together. And the funny thing is, actually, that happened once. We all ended up at ice cream that night and could talk
Give
to each other.
Altoids to your opponent, like George Bush, Michelle Obama.
And so we did have an issue where everybody had moved away from our downtown, right? We didn't really have a downtown. Clearfield is a very old community, and we were shifting. We didn't have a lot of businesses here. And so we did have to take a bold move and bring something in that may be a little unpopular to some people, and that's called high density housing. That's why I tell people, go find out what's going on. It's actually more important for you to know who your mayor and city council are than probably the president of the United States. Your mayor and city council are impacting your life every day, but be willing to work with them and find out why things are going on.
And it's rarely, one of the issues we're having in our northeast part of town. I had to think. I'm looking up at this. I had to think. It's forcing me to think. Northeast part of town is a grocery store, right? And there's multiple things that are preventing it. There's multiple things that make it hard. Crime. Income. The big grocers want certain guarantees, right? And so when you said doing something unpopular, there was a data center that wanted to move into that part of town too, and the planning commission, and I think ultimately the city council, tanked it. And I was like, did you guys ask any of our neighboring towns how these data centers have impacted them either positively or negatively? In the town, 30 minutes up the road, it paid for four fire stations. And, in my mind, some of these things are not whether we should do them or not. It's, getting involved and bleeding the turnip, so to speak, right? Making sure, hey, you want to come into our community. Not only do you want to come into our community, you've already bought this property. You've already started ahead of permits and ahead of approvals building on this. So, hey, guess what? You're kind of, we have an upper hand here, right? Now, you're a big organization, so you're probably just going to write this off, no matter what. Maybe it's not important to you, but in my mind, having no experience sitting on the city council, only, but in my mind, it's more of a situation of leveraging what they want to do and what we want to do to create win-wins, right? If we bring in a data center, if we allow them to build, we can create contracts and stuff that require them to use local resources, that requires them to hire people for their service contracts based upon, I mean, based, upon certain criteria. We could pay for four new fire stations, and we might be able to, and if we can get people employed and we can get more people secure in housing and other needs, we potentially could eliminate or have a reduction in the crime problem as well. And so I think that sometimes we get so caught up in what we've heard, right? Because what we hear on the
Yes.
news or on social media is this is the negative stuff. And I believe it's specifically targeted. And it's because what happens now is the people that get, the stories that get the most views and stuff are the ones that are that trigger our deepest, darkest fears, right? The whatever that may be. And they spread like wildfire. The truth, an article that's more truthful about an issue is less likely to get shared than an article that's less true, right? That
A
has more
great book
falsehood.
is a great book to read is 13 Ways to Kill Your Community. It talks about the vocal minority in there, just what you're touching on. They get vocal, and sometimes the truth gets swallowed by them being so vocal.
Well, it doesn't. We all have our issues and stuff that we need to, and I got it. People want a grocery store that's not 20 miles away, but that's where we have to start looking at, in my mind, the win-win, right? And where I see, like, you guys are, we call these enablers in the army, right? Like the army, at the end of the day, the United States Army's just being very base about it is to project combat power and to wage, and wage war and kill people, right? Fight the nation's wars and win them. But there's enablers. You got to have supplies. You got to have comms. You got to have, and I see like your organizations as those enablers, right? Because people come in, they have problems. That maybe they're functionally homeless. They're homeless. They're employed, but maybe they're underemployed. And we all have these beliefs that, hey, this is what's preventing me from getting this job. It's because, Tim Roper Enterprises owns all this property, and he only hires his wife's family has a he is huge. And he only hires her and her relatives, to run these businesses. We have these preconceived notions, right? That's a pretty facetious example, but I see your company, your organization's coming in and helping people develop these skills, which is vital to make them more economically secure. At the same time, bringing in organizations that can offer jobs that can help strengthen our tax base. One of the things around here that kicks us in the butt is that we have say you build you open a new housing development, you're going to lose 30% of your tax base right off the bat because of all the 100% disabled vets in the area. And in my mind, if we can get everybody working together, get all these enablers together, we can come up with a solution that creates wins for everybody. And but like you, I think we are increasingly polarized. I think we can't see the forest for the trees, and I believe it's because we just have such a crisis of self-worth and esteem and efficacy that we are that this concept, I call it kind of a victim mentality in perpetuity, right? We've just kind of gotten accustomed to saying it's somebody else's fault. When we do that, we give away a lot of our ability to affect what we can affect. I mean, it's powerful what you guys are doing, because
Thank
there's
you.
no
Yeah.
one right solution.
There's none. I often say, the smartest person in the room is the room, that saying. And it's true. If we can all come to the table and we can realize I'm the only person who could agrees with myself 100% of the time. So if I can swallow my pride a little bit, listen to other people's ideas, I don't always have to be the vocal one at the table at right up the front. Listening to other ideas, and doing that, you think you learn from things and you learn, hey, wow, this person is right. Their idea may, but if maybe if I just maybe we combine our ideas here, we can do a lot more here. I just think we get a lot more done with that mentality. And I started off saying, it's one thing to be right, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. If I'm willing to sit down and talk to someone and hear, a good example is we have a young city councilman on our council. When he came on board, his name's Dakota, and him and I've had some great conversations together. But first, he said, "You and I are never going to work out. I'm a little lean a little bit more to the right. And he leans a little bit more to the left." And even though that I have learned to hate labels like that now, but I said, I think I may shock you. We can work together." And listening to each other, we became some of the best allies out there, and we're able to accomplish. I said, "As long as we're doing what's right for our community, we really can't go wrong here.
All
So
right.
let's swallow our agendas here. Let's swallow our pride, and let's work together."
Well, that's that concept. I think Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, right? And Lincoln's cabinet, they were a rowdy bunch, and they some you know they all were very, I mean, like powerful people, or people performing at a high level are, they're confident, they know their stuff, they know. But he didn't surround himself with yes men. He didn't surround himself with the people who thought like him, and he didn't and I think he benefited from it. I mean, but it makes
Oh,
it more
absolutely.
challenging, right? Because then you got to manage them. If you look back to World War II and you look at Eisenhower as a supreme Allied commander, I mean, look at he had Montgomery, he had De Gaulle, I believe it was, Patton, MacArthur. My guess, MacArthur was in the Pacific, so maybe he didn't have to. That's probably off. MacArthur was certainly a personality, a force to be reckoned with. He wasn't one that Eisenhower necessarily had to deal with. But my point was is that these great leaders had, you have to, if you're going to give surround yourself with people that are willing to speak up and that are very passionate and might speak differently, you also have to be able to manage it, right? And you have to be able to say, hey, okay, go sit down in the corner, like Eisenhower had to do with Patton many times. But I think we benefit from that. I think we benefit more. I think what we're used to today is just we just breathe our own exhaust, right? And when we want, I'll give you an example as we before we end this. We need a city manager right now. And it appears what we're doing is we're using all the normal firms to go find somebody who has the usual pedigree. But I'm like, why do maybe that's not what we need. I'm just contrarian enough to say, hey, maybe that's not what we need. I did some work with a grocery cooperative. They do about a few million dollars business a year. They started as a it was a dream that the organization was incorporated in for 5, 6 years before they ever opened the doors. Everything was just preparing for that moment when they opened. And then a few years later, same people are on the board, same leaders, they're passionate about it, but now things are starting to decline. And and what I they kept saying, well, we're never going to be able to find a general manager. We're never going to be able to do this. And I came in and consulted with them, and I was like, well, I'm thinking, so who is this consultant on the books? We're paying them every month. And I looked it up. I called the guys. Yeah, this is I special talked with him, and I said, And I said, this is the person we need to be the general manager on an interim basis. So he's not going to do it. Oh, I said, you're absolutely right. We can't afford to pay him, not in terms of a salary that he's used to getting right now at this moment. But what we can do is offer a deferred compensation package. Pay him what we find out what his non-negotiables are. We did that, and within months it was a 180.
Yeah,
And
it's
so,
amazing when we think that way.
well, because we. we get so concerned. Well, I need an expert in this. I need an expert in nonprofits to come help me, with this. But really, what you need is somebody whose perspective is a little broader, right? And there's the metaphor analogy we use in the army quite a bit, and it basically says if you're the commander and you're running up the hill with your people, you're not managing the and so the sometimes we get used to breathing our own smoke. We're in the heat of things, our own we get breathing our own exhaust, and we're in the heat of things, and we don't realize we lose a little bit of perspective, right? We're running off of perception, and we don't have that person that's kind of up here on the top of the hill running the battle for us, letting us know
Absolutely.
what all is going on. I think that it's just like you said, that ties into everything you said about how polarized we've become, how inculcated in our lack of judgment. Now it's coming out that many senior people knew that President Biden's health was declining and didn't, and that stuff just cascades down, right? And imagine how the person who is in who's in need, in genuine need, like you're talking about. Imagine how that affects their trust, right? And then what happens when your trust is affected? You don't reach out, right? Like you reached out to your physician or to your network when you were transitioning and asked for help, but you did it because you trusted them. Imagine what the person that you're working with, the your kind of typical ideal client who's kind of got multiple things not going in their favor right now. Imagine how they feel when they see things like people that they're supposed to trust and be able to trust are not doing the right thing. So it just compounds. And so I think that the work that you're, I said that to say, the work that you're doing is vital because you're establishing that trust at the ground level, for people that are that need it. Well, I think as we come to a close, what do you want to leave us with today, Tim?
Just to look outside ourselves, be willing to see people as people out there, and let's find those needs in our communities. I'd love to get connected with other people who just don't want to do the same thing out there. And let's build alliances out there, and let's bring just that common sense leadership back. Let's just learn to get along with each other and build our communities up, because that's what does make our country great. That's what makes us just great as humans, is being willing to do that. And I can't promote our nonprofits enough out there. There's so many great organizations out there. Go find them and get involved with them and see what you can do to enhance them and make them better.
Okay, before we sign off here, why don't you go ahead and tell us the name of your nonprofit, the nonprofit that you're working with again, so that they know where to find you.
So, Open Doors Utah is what it is called. So, you can go Google that and get in contact with us. Reach out to me. I love to connect with people on LinkedIn or anything like that. I love expanding my network and just getting to know people, getting to know their stories. And then all the United Ways out there are great to be involved with too, and that's a great way to find other nonprofits as well.
Well, Tim, thank you for joining us on episode 6. I have to remember now because I'm getting almost to the double digits of the six or
Sometimes they're
seven. I
hard to
can't
keep track
remember.
of.
Yeah, it's seven, episode 7 of the Hero Mindset Podcast. Thank you for joining us
Yeah,
and
thank you. It's been
best to
great.
you in the future.
Thanks, man.